Hej. Har du lite tid? Jag skulle vilja krångla till dig just denna ände. Jag kan inte säga att jag vet vad som hände, men jag minns exakt vad mina händer kände.
Hej och välkomna till Konsthantverkspodden. Din ledsagare bland knådbord, äschor, vävstolar och hyvelbänkar. Jag heter Petter Rodiner och tillsammans med mig vid mikrofonerna har jag idag Ida Netteberg och Lisa Maria Pettersson. Jag hoppas att ni lyssnare har hittat en bekväm plats att slå er ner. För idag passerar vi ännu en milstolpe i Konsthantverkspoddens historia. Because today we are doing our first ever episode in English. This is the advanced class, the Craft 102. The sorry, our guest is from outside of Sweden, so we have two episodes. And that guest is none other than Natalie Baxter.
Hi.
Of most recent Jaspis fame. Welcome, Natalie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. Did you find your way?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It was pretty easy.
Yeah, great.
We were joking that it's like Stockholm looks like Gothenburg on steroids.
Oh, I like that. As a Stockholmer, I like that. But maybe we can start with that you give us a little brief introduction to who you are and what you do.
My name is Natalie Baxter. I am originally from Kentucky, from Lexington, Kentucky, but I have been living in New York for about 10 years now, I think, which is kind of wild. And then I am here, I've been here for 3 months, actually, in Gothenburg doing a residency through IASPIS and also through Craft Days and also sort of affiliated with Konstepidemin, which is another reason why I'm here in Stockholm to participate in the supermarket art fair and then also to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me. But I, my background, like education-wise, is actually, it's sort of in like an interdisciplinary work, but I sort of leaned more towards video and filmmaking. So when I moved to New York, I did a lot of that. And but yet I come from this like long lineage of women on my mom's side of the family that taught me how to quilt and sew. So I always had that skill, but not in terms of my art practice until I got really sick of looking at a computer screen and working on other people's films. And I was like, I had picked up a quilt that my grandmother started, and that sort of like brought fabric into my art making. And I sort of haven't fallen out of it. So I usually don't necessarily call myself a textile artist, but I pretty much work predominantly with textiles. And I do a lot of soft sculpture work. And
It's quite interesting because like we are an outspoken like craft podcast or whatever, and we're all like educated within craft or Konsthantverk, and it's very interesting to hear someone that, because that feels also like a very Swedish word, Konsthantverk, or more Nordic Scandinavian,
and not possibly an exact translation of craft,
right? But it's very interesting to hear like an American like perspective on working with, because we would probably put you in like that, under that label of Konsthantverker or craft artist, but maybe you don't really look at yourself.
Well, I do. Like, I think like that is, and I've learned that you guys, you guys would be the experts to ask, but that like craft has like so almost a different meaning here than than like in America. Do you think that's true?
Well, what do you see in the word?
Like there's, I think that there's more, let's see if I can articulate this. I don't know. I don't feel like.
Is it like scrapbooking? Like, is it more?
No, I am doing a craft. I'm like very much, you know, quilting and sewing, but in the context of the contemporary art world and art making. But I don't know. I've just heard that might mean something sort of different here.
Yeah, well, a lot of like the international artists that I, or like craft artists or whatever, that I've spoken to also like experience this kind of weird relationship to when, because we in Sweden talk a lot about craft, but like a lot of my British friends, they don't like to use the word craft at all, because that's kind of used almost as a derogatory term, mm-hmm. or like it's low value yeah. stuff, like you don't want to do craft, like that's not.
But hasn't it been like that with Konsthantverk also? Like, I remember before I started to study Konstfack, I thought Konsthantverk was really like a bad word in a way, like something you don't want to be associated with. So I think it's, I think we have the same kind of.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And I think it's also been a lot of like work with upcycling the word, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, there's a point of using it to heighten the status of those things, perhaps. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, at least in Sweden.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's been a project to raise yeah. those types of skills
yeah.
and that type of intelligence to higher levels.
Yeah. And I mean, like a focus at like art schools or the education that we've all been at is to also like broaden the term,
yeah. or maybe are like start. Did you guys go to HDK? Are you the?
We're all Konstfackers.
And that's the one that's at
Stockholm.
In Stockholm. Oh, in Stockholm. Okay, because yeah. I toured the school at the Textile Arts Center
in Borås.
Yeah, yeah. Borås, yeah. which was amazing.
Yeah,
it was so wild. And then also HDK in Gothenburg. And it was, yeah, that's just like so different than the education that I come from.
Mm-hmm.
But that, not that that doesn't exist in the US. I'm sure there's like an equivalent. I don't know, though. It was so amazing. It was like so many really expensive pieces of equipment. That
yeah, but Borås is very technically like focused, right?
Yeah.
They are very, it's because Borås is also an old, like a super old textile factory city.
Yeah.
So there's a long tradition of textile manufacturing and textile science.
Yeah.
Because at Borås, that school, they have also like material chemistry and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it feels like it's very technical.
Yeah, I guess my point in introducing myself that way is saying that if you're referencing the craft of quilting or sewing in as a technical term of like the like ability or the craft, I think that mine is not that good. Like there's like a quilt. There's something in America called QuiltCon. Have you ever heard a quilt convention?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can enter your quilts, and if you know, they're looking at like the size of the stitches and the like technically how good your quilt is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's other categories too, but if I were to enter that, my quilts would not be, you know. So I'm using these like sewing and quilting and like techniques that I learned, but sort of were like, they were passed down to me and then sort of self-taught, but using it as the message for the kind of work that I want to say. The kind of things I want to say that I think the fabric and that technique and that craft, if you will, is really good at conveying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think that is almost like the textbook definition of what maybe the professors at Konstfack would like to hear when if somebody applied. It's like I'm not a very good craftsman, but like I want to use this material and this technique to say what I want to say. Like
yeah.
it's there's a point in using textiles, but I don't have to be good at it.
Okay.
I think so too.
Your description fits perfectly like in the Konsthantverk scene in
yeah,
Sweden.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially like now. I mean, I think like if you look back in history, maybe it would be more like you should be technically like good at what you're doing, or like you should be an artisan rather than focus on expression.
Right.
But I think it's more and more leaning towards maybe being more, yeah, like an artist.
Yeah, it all seems to come down to context. Not to get into a huge craft debate. I'm sure you guys have had this conversation a million times before. But,
yeah, but it's very interesting to get a new or like fresh perspective on things as well. Because it kind of gets bogged down here. I mean, we have the conversation about what is a Konstantverk. It feels like every day.
Yeah, every episode.
Yeah. Sure.
What the hell?
I mean, that the conversation's happening a lot in the like contemporary art scene in New York and in the craft scene and, you know.
But in New York, do you feel like you are a part of the like art scene there or another scene? Or
I think the art scene.
Yeah.
Just because, I think that has to do with context of like where you're showing your work, where you're putting it and how, because that's how people are reading it. If it's in a gallery that you're used to seeing contemporary art or, you know, then you're reading it as that.
When I look at your work, it feels very crafty. And like that textiles and the technique that you use, quilting, is like, it carries a lot of meaning. Like there's a point to you, you're working with it, not just like, oh, I had some fabric, so I just used that to do whatever. Like, can you talk a little, or can you tell us a little bit about like what textiles means to you and in your work and like what quilting kind of, what it carries.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting because I think that's been pushed even further in the last 3 months that I've like the relationship to the actual material. But when I first started working with textiles was sort of this like first series of work that I did was this collection of guns. It's called Warm Gun. It's this like droopy, colorful stuffed objects that were using fabric that I would just... that I did have around the house or that I would go to like the garment district in New York or like a quilt shop or whatever. I wasn't so selective on the kind of where I was getting the fabric, but I was more looking for colorful, floral, very sort of more like feminine leaning because I was sort of exploring this like masculinity in American gun culture and wanted to sort of push that through the... like the prints of the fabric and the materials. But, with that work, I was really, I really thought about the context of it because they are pretty much like stuffed animals that could be sold on like an Etsy website, like a craft, do you know Etsy? Yeah, like a craft website that, you know, that could be like a decorative pillow or something. But I was really interested in the context of making lots of them and putting them in like a gallery space and really thinking through the concept of the work. I think sort of because the nature of the material and the nature of the like the soft sculpture aspect, but also using that as like a really powerful way of like exploring something kind of complicated in American culture through this like warm, cuddly thing. But now, since I've been in Sweden for 3 months, you know, when you come on a residency, especially when you're flying across the world to do that residency, you're not bringing your whole studio. You don't know all the fabric stores around. So I started going to secondhand stores. There's so many in Gothenburg. I'm sure there's so many here too in Stockholm. But and like looking at the materials there and really using like old. Domestic objects like bed sheets and curtains that were, you know, somebody had discarded, but that had this sort of past life. And especially these aprons. I think it's sort of a Swedish thing, right?
Aprons in general, you mean?
Yeah, just like aprons. There's so many aprons, like beautiful, like, you know, you put around your waist and you...
Maybe no one wants them anymore. That's why you can buy a lot of them.
Yeah.
I can just imagine.
Some of them looked handmade, like... And from lots of different eras, like some maybe from the 70s or...
I think at least in my family was a big, big thing, both on my mom's side and dad's side, that their parents or their mothers always had aprons and also made them themselves. But
aprons are part of like the folk dress, right?
Exactly, also part of folk dress,
So I think that's why there might be a lot of them...
But that's interesting to think about it as like a Swedish thing I never thought of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's aprons everywhere, I guess. But there's like a whole section at the at the secondhand store that had like these beautiful aprons that were like really, yeah. Anyway, so I started buying some of those. And I was also kind of coming off of a series of work that I did of these house coats. They're these like very oversized, which is also sort of like an antiquated garment in... like I was sort of pulling that imagery from my grandmother, who the one that taught me how to quilt and to sew, who would like put on this garment that goes over your clothes, but that you would wear to sort of perform duties around the house. Mm-hmm. So like cooking or cleaning or gardening or quilting. And so sort of like this homemaker workwear outfit.
Right. Which was Städrock.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Swedish. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Is that what it is? Yeah. So that was sort of like coming off of the pandemic of like all of a sudden, like I, weirdly for the last 2 years, I've been like on a residency hopping expedition with my family. So it's been really interesting. But so I found myself like in upstate New York at a residency called the Wasaic Project. And, for like 9 months. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm like baking a lot of bread and cooking and like taking care of a child and like, you know, going and quilting every day. I was like, I'm kind of like living my grandmother's life. So I started thinking about this concept of this house coat. Mm. Anyway, so I was already sort of in this like domestic world in my work, and then seeing these aprons as also sort of this like tool or uniform that you put on to sort of perform these duties of the house. But I love that these materials are like, they're like a lot of fabrics, people around here were like, oh yeah, I used to have those curtains, or like I used to have those bed sheets, but it's all like sort of exotic looking to me because you don't see those in American thrift stores. So I like this like generational play and this like sort of like I made them into like their own quilt. So they're almost like in a framed piece of like this object of the apron. So sort of like glorifying it or giving it its like its place to be recognized and to, yeah. So sort of like elevating this uniform used to like do these tasks that are from somebody, you know, of the past, unknown.
Yeah. But you work a lot with those kind of like ready-made materials. You don't dye anything yourself, or you don't print. Or do you?
Well, not really, but I did do a collaboration with a friend of mine who does, she's really into natural dyeing and like making natural pigments.
Yep.
Her name's Julia Norton. And she sort of pushed me to do a project where we use naturally dyed fabrics, and I got into that for a little while. But it's so different from like the other kind of work that I do, like just like style wise that I liked doing it, but I don't know if it's like I brought some, I did some like a dye right before I came to Sweden. I was like, maybe I want to use this, but I never used it. So
it's nice to see your work because there is so much history in the materials already. You talk about these house coats.
Yeah.
You can see like each piece, it has its own history kind of. It also ties into a lot of like traditions of like patching clothes, also like around the house.
Yes.
Like you don't buy something new, you patch it like, oh, I have this piece that kind of fits here. And like,
exactly.
If you made your own fabrics, that quality wouldn't like arise.
Yeah, especially speaking of residencies that kind of push you to use different materials. I did a residency in Tennessee last summer, and again, like, you know, didn't bring like really any fabrics. So I ended up going to a thrift store, like a pay by the pound place, and they had all these jeans, which there's sort of a history of in the United States, maybe here too, of using old jeans to create quilts. So like a long time ago, it was like usually women using their husband's old workwear. So like these jeans that have been worn out from doing like physical labor, and then turn them into like a quilt, something useful that, and then there's like, I love that there's like all of that like sort of domestic labor in creating that quilt. So I made these like a giant house coat out of jeans, and a couple other things, like a big like stuffed laundry basket out of jeans. So I loved that like referencing of that, exactly what you're talking about, like using what you have.
There's also, there's an exhibition in southern Sweden at, what's it, it's not one of those, I can't remember now. It's a big art center in southern Sweden where they have an exhibition with Japanese craft, where there's also like a super long tradition of this, like adding, just fixing your old old clothes with a new or like used fabrics. So eventually, like the garment you're wearing isn't the one that was created from the start. It has become like a completely new set of material. Like it's the old jacket, but it's not, like no piece of the old jacket is left, but it's still the same jacket.
That's cool.
Which is a super interesting idea.
Yeah, I love that. Very nice. I feel like there's such a revival of that kind of craft too, of like mending and fixing what you have rather than buying new things, which is really great. Just maybe sort of like a, well, out of need, because you know, we don't need to be like wasting so many resources, but also maybe sort of like a pandemic thing of like all of a sudden you're using what you have around the house, or you're like getting back to sort of the basic way of basic ways of living.
Yeah. We didn't really have we didn't have a lockdown here in Sweden, as you might know. So I don't think we experienced that as like much as somebody might have in New York, where there was a total lockdown. But like through internet, I think we've all experienced that there has been like a rise in people maybe cooking more, baking more, and also making a lot, like doing stuff around the house, which is, it's a continuation of, I think, like handmade stuff is on the rise, as you say.
Yeah.
So I also really like, I keep coming back to these house coats, but I really like how they are also like, they feel very modern with these additions of maybe the... one of them has like this piece of this t-shirt with a bikini outline, which is such a fun like take on it, because it kind of feels like a super traditional maybe garment, but then there's this really non-traditional fabric piece that's like in focus there on the back.
Yeah, these like bathing suit cover-up shirts. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen them or if they're around in Sweden that much, but they're definitely...
Yeah, I think you can buy them on Drottninggatan or something like that. You know, these like t-shirts so. With like an outline like
with,
of...
with a body in a bikini.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because one thing about the house coat is like, it's so shapeless, you know? So it's like, it's sort of hiding your body. And I love that, like, the concept of that, those t-shirts. There's like a bathing suit cover-up t-shirt with like a really... sexy lady in a bikini, and like, you know, maybe you don't have that beautiful sexy body underneath, but you're like portraying this like facade that you do, and I love that. And I so I really tried to layer on like that bikini shirt, the like there's like a quilt pattern, the double wedding band quilt, which is sort of like this traditional quilt that you get if you get married, and then and these like a hospital receiving blanket, like if you have a baby, they give you the baby wrapped up in this certain kind of blanket, and sort of like pushing the material more into these sort of like collective things that are sort of like weighing you down as maybe like a caretaker or a woman or a mother, and also sort of like hiding behind it because they're very oversized. So if you're to put it on, it's like it's big and it's like heavy, and it's actually kind of hard to perform these.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about that because when I was looking at your work on your website and on Instagram, I was contemplating if they, because I don't really know anything about the house coat traditions.
Yeah.
Because they are very oversized. Is that how they would be in like if somebody had one just for use as well?
Well, they're not that oversized. They're definitely, the ones that I make are more. They're like larger than life, but they're definitely they're not like a shapely thing.
Right.
They're
it's workwear.
Supposed to be comfortable and like functional. So like big pockets and like sometimes like shorter sleeves to so you don't have to roll your sleeves up. And like really easy to like snap on and snap off and put over your clothes. But it is sort of an antiquated thing, and not everybody really necessarily knows the reference of a house coat.
Is it a Kentucky thing or is it like a Pan-American, everybody knows?
I don't know if everybody in America knows it, but I know like I showed one and a woman from Ireland came up, was like, oh yeah, this is like very much like part of my heritage too. And then also like in New York, I lived in Queens, and you can like, there's like, I picture like the old Italian women like wearing them, like sweeping their front stoop or like, you know, so I think it's not just America, but.
No, I actually have this, seen these house coats. I don't know if it is exactly the same, but for sure these straight ones with pockets.
Yeah.
And you use them over your clothes and exactly for all kinds of work you do in the home environment generally.
Isn't it depending on if you have a good heating system or not? I was thinking.
Like, well, there's like winter house coats and then there's summer ones. There's like really light ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually what I brought like a really light one here that was like a vintage one that I incorporated into a quilt. That was sort of the first thing I did when I got here. So I did bring some materials actually.
Natalie, you're from America and you're now here in Sweden doing stuff at a residency. And you've been invited by Jaspis and Konstantverk Centrum, or
yes,
yeah. So, and how did that happen? Like, I'm kind of curious about the international, going international or whatever.
What I learned now, at the time, I just got an email that was like, "Hey, we want to nominate you for a residency in Sweden," and I was like, "Is this a real email?" You know,
like, it was like a cold call.
Yeah,
you didn't apply for it.
I did not apply. Okay. Yeah, so it was like. Unexpected, but also I was like, what is this? And so like, I did actually know a couple Swedish people. There's like in the studio building I was at in New York, there was a Swedish woman across the hall. And so I was like, hey, do you know what IASPIS is? And she was like, yes, that's awesome. Like, it's a great one. You should do it if you get in. And I was like, okay. And then I called another Swedish artist, Michelle Pred, who's lives in America, but anyway, she was like, "Yes, do this. Like, if you get in." So I did send like a PDF of like, "This is who I am. This is like a little thing about me."
Yeah.
And then they were like, "Cool, we want to bring you to Sweden." And like, it's so amazing here. It's been like learning about how artists are treated, mostly like with financial support here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always the case in the U.S. So they're like, you know, if somebody emails you and wants to fly you to another country and put you up and give you money. And I was like, yes, of course. It sounds amazing.
It's not that common.
I think everybody gets that treatment. But it's great. I mean, but is this the first time you're working internationally or are you?
Well, I've shown a lot internationally. Well, yeah, I've shown in Europe and Germany and Mexico City. I did the Material Art Fair down there with Beverly's, which is like a gallery and used to be a bar in New York. But I'm trying to think. Somebody asked me this recently and I was like, I think I have to look at my resume to see where I have shown. But I think, like, you're asking, like, how did I get...
Yeah, I mean, I don't want a guide or like a tutorial on how to do it, but like, because I think a lot of our listeners are artists and craft artists, and they're, I think a lot of people are curious about the international scene.
Yeah.
Because Sweden is kind of small, or not even kind of small, it's small.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of people want to go outside of Sweden, but maybe aren't sure how to, like, where to start. Like,
yeah.
I mean, getting an invitation is a good start, but that's not always the case. Like,
so even since being here, like, I've met, you know, a lot of Swedish artists who, what I've learned is that what I've experienced is that Sweden likes to do a lot of sort of cross-cultural exchanges, you know? So, and you can, like, apply for money. This is my understanding, maybe I'm wrong, but you can like apply for a project to like do something in another country. So I think like the first step is like making a connection with artists from, you know, everywhere, which is pretty easy because the internet, like I feel like Instagram and like, you know, social media things, however like evil they sometimes can feel, But they're so great for doing that and for like being able to like connect with artists from all over. And then, or doing residencies is that where you meet people from other countries like that, that then like are like, oh, you should check out this residency or, oh, you should do this one or, you know, and then you meet people and then you end up showing and at because they have connected you with somebody there. So I think like.
But you didn't set out to like make an international career in that sense.
No, not necessarily. I mean, no. It's great that that worked out that way. But well, I did like I did apply to some residencies. Like I almost went to Iceland for a residency, but then at the time it just felt too financially crazy. Because you know,
because now you're traveling with your family, right?
Yeah.
Like how?
Yeah, I know. It's so insane. It's weird. Like I did not expect to be doing residencies with like once I had a kid. I was like, all right, that's probably done for a while. Like that part of my life. But then the pandemic hit, and my husband's a freelance photographer, so his work dried up really, and then New York was so intense with the pandemic and like being stuck in, we were in like a small apartment and I was like, let's get out of here. And this residency upstate opened up. So we did like a long-term residency there. And then we were supposed to come to Sweden last year, but pushed it a year because we didn't have vaccines yet. And it felt too crazy to travel. But anyway, so all of a sudden I'm like, oh, we're like living a nomadic life and it's very strange, but we've, you know, he gets freelance work, actually, like maybe he's like been photographing some stuff here. Like he can kind of work wherever ish, which is nice. And then,
that sounds like the perfect setup then.
Yeah, and there's like paying me to be here and like give lectures. It's so amazing. I'm like I feel very very fortunate to have had this experience.
Maybe we should round things off. We usually do some kind of like recommendations. And since you've been in Gothenburg for a while, maybe you have like some tips on exhibitions or upcoming lectures maybe or talks. Do you have anything? Have you seen anything good recently?
Let's see.
That might be on still in a week or two.
I cannot remember the woman's name, the artist.
Is it in Gothenburg?
It's in Gothenburg, yeah. The big museum there.
Göteborgs Konsthall, right?
Yeah.
Like it's that maybe the one? The one with the Poseidon outside?
Yes.
Yeah, at the end of the Avenue.
And they had like a big Friday, they had like a band and beers and like a party. Mm. So the show itself was really packed. But it was a Swedish artist she did a lot of craft-based things, like a wide variety of work, like... She made like some furniture, like did like some like felting, like embroidery on felt things. It's just like amazing to be like, whoa, this is a lot of work, and you can tell that she really just like lived her art. Mm. Thought that was kind of. I do not remember her name.
We will Google this.
Yeah,
and
we'll also post some kind of link.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. I'm trying to think what else I've seen. Lately, there was I think the show might be down at Gallery Thomason. It was like a spring break. It's called Spring Break Show. It was like a ton of artists. Mm. And it was really great. I thought I went to the opening and I went again later to see it again with less people. And it was a lot of really awesome work there.
But you're here in Stockholm now to do, you're going to be a part of your supermarket.
Yeah. So
with Konstepidemin.
Yes. Konstepidemin.
And that opens.
I think it might open, like maybe it's like VIP Wednesday or Thursday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it will be over when this is.
Oh, this is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
But do you have anything else going on? Like, do you have any plugs? Or?
I was really impressed with Konstepidemin. Like I didn't really. Have you guys been there?
No. But here it's threatened with the raising of the rents.
Yeah. Yes, I've been learning more about that, which also sort of like has gotten me to learn a little more about like the history of Gothenburg and the sort of like the art scene there, which has been really interesting. But it's huge. Mm. It's like I didn't expect it to be. It's like 150 studios or 130 or something like that. And it's an old epidemic hospital that's has all of these different buildings, and we're staying in the little guardhouse. So it's sort of like, it's really amazing to be like, oh, we're in this, we have this little house, like right in the center of Gothenburg.
Okay, this is where you live with your
family. Yeah, that's where we're living.
I understand.
And my studio's there. And but they also have all these different gallery spaces there. So there's like really cool old houses that that are turned into exhibition spaces. So I did a show there for like a weekend and did a lecture there. And yeah, I feel like they are always doing stuff. Like there's music happening there, or like different exhibitions like that come up, and I think that they're really into sort of experimenting and letting people sort of you know, letting maybe younger artists or more emerging artists use the space. And
but there's an example there that our society is not perfect at all, that this type of places are threatened also. Yeah. So,
but yeah. It's, if you talk like relating rents versus,
yeah. If you compare, but it is, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that's, I'm sure that's, yeah, it's also like, I've only been here for 3 months. I don't know the like intense, that's also been interesting to be like, oh, this place is amazing. And people are like, is
it really? You know, the small toilets.
Yeah. You're like, you're really impressed with the toilet. But it's like, you know, I don't obviously don't know. I haven't been here long enough to like really know what's.
No, but you compare also from other places in the world. Obviously, there are we are very privileged in many ways in that sense. Yes, with the support of yeah, exactly. Especially with children,
healthcare,
and things. Yeah, healthcare and
education. Yeah,
education.
Like the fact that that
sure,
amazing school that I've toured that has all these amazing in Boros.
Boros.
I feel like I have like my own Swedish language that's mispronouncing everything. But just like the fact that you can go there for free if you're Swedish.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, education, free education is good.
That's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But we have some recommendations. On June 4th, the exhibition Afterglow opens at the Porcelain Museum in Gustavsberg. Mm. 13 artists from Denmark, Norway, Finland and Sweden have been invited to look at the history of porcelain industry. I should also mention that the program for the Stockholm Craft Week 2022 edition is now official on stockholmcraftweek.se. Go check that list out. Konstantverks podden will, as usual, make a Craft Week special. And if you, as a listener, have something in particular, either on the program for Craft Week or otherwise, that you would like to hear us talk more about, don't hesitate to email us at konstantverkspodden@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at konstantverkspodden. Yeah, that's pretty much what we have for today. Thank you so much, Natalie Baxter, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Konstantverkspodden görs av mig, Petter Odiner, Lisa Maria Pettersson, Ida Netteberg och Evelina Dovsten. I samarbete med Konstantverkscentrum och med stöd från Kulturrådet. Ljudet görs av Eminenta Umami Produktion. Musiken görs av Karin Fjellman Dovsten. Tack Natalie igen. Och tack till alla er som lyssnade. Håll öronen öppna så hörs vi.
Ta.
Hej då.
Hej då.
Hej då.